Now and NRL players having very public tryouts with American football teams could become a thing of the past. Cronulla boss Lyle Gorman has told the Big Sports Breakfast that club bosses look set to crack down on the practice because of injury and contractual concerns. It follows recent NFL tryouts for Valentine Holmes and Jason Tormalolo. Former Australian cricket captain Alan Border says Glenn Maxwell needs to get himself sorted to win a national recall and the trust of fellow players. Border reckons Maxwell has dug a hole for himself with his public criticism of teammate Matthew Wade. New South Wales has lost the Sheffield Shield match against South Australia after Chad Sayers tore through the Blues' second innings. Sayers claimed 5 wickets as the Blues crashed for just 87, Ed Cowan the top scorer with 45. Young Penrith halfback Nathan Cleary has been named in the New South Wales emerging State of Origin squad. His Penrith teammates Bryce Cartwright and Regan Campbell-Gillard are also in the squad. And Premier League champions Leicester City have been smashed 5-0 by FC Porto in the Champions League match in Portugal. Sydney weather today, partly cloudy, hot in the west with tops of 37 and 29 degrees on the coast. I'll be back in half an hour on Sky Sports Radio, your racing and sports leader.
At the new look Queensland Summer Racing Carnival, the best jockeys in Australasia will be riding for pride in the Origin Jockey Series. Round one begins this Saturday with Michael Rodd and Karen McAvoy, Michael Walker and Jim Byrne, and 8 of the best hoops in the land competing across a great day's racing. See them only at Eagle Farm this Saturday. The Origin Jockey Series. For details, go to youbet.com or check your local form guides.
Inglis Classic is firmly in the spotlight. In 2016, Inglis Classic has produced 19 individual stakes winners, including 5 at Group 1 level, such as Yankee Rose, I Am a Star, and Extreme Choice. 600 yearlings across 3 days, and new to 2017, the Gold Raband session on Saturday night. Join us on the 11th to 13th of February at Newmarket, Sydney. Inglis Classic catalogue at inglis.com.au.
Celebrate Christmas with Bingley's 24 Days of Hot Christmas Deals. The latest online catalogue is out now and is jam-packed with bargains. So head into a Bingley store or online at bingley.com.au and grab a deal during Bingley's 24 Days of Hot Christmas Deals.
They're off. Gates open. They're off and racing.
On your racing and sports leader, Sky Sports Radio, it's time for Tab Tour.
One of the legends of the sport creates a little bit of magic at the mountain.
It's the first time he's finished above a GP Philip Island. Mark Marquez does it in style down under.
With the very latest in racing and sport from around the country, welcome to Tab Talk.
And good morning, everyone. Jared Middleton, tab.com.au, joins me now. How are you, Jared?
Great, Cozzy. Working hard, mate. But, gee, Andrew, a couple of days off. Not exactly, is it?
Well, I've had about 5 texts from him this morning. He's wrong. he doesn't take a day off, mate. He doesn't take a day off.
No, he loves it, doesn't he?
Yeah, he certainly does. Anyway, he's enjoying things. And David Hayes is just going to be terrorised by him now, probably for a couple of hours. You find David Hayes in an empty box, hiding under a rug.
He's probably got the choice tea and bickies, I dare say, too.
Oh, too right. He'll be there, not a problem. Never mind, we'll be right. Now, we've got a whole heap we're going to talk to this morning. In a moment, we'll have a chat with Aaron Osborne from Sydney Thunder, the cricket. And I tell you what, the women's sport in this country is just, it's so good, isn't it?
Oh, it's fine. Yeah, absolutely. And you just have to have a look at how professional the women's cricket in particular has come. Now they've got the Women's Big Bash League and, a lot of professional players are going around now in Australian cricket, and it's great to see.
Well, Erin's with the Sydney Thunder. She's with us now. Morning, Erin. How are you?
Well, thanks. How are you?
Terrific. I just say to you that women's sport really has improved. Well, the quality's so good. I suppose you look at the Olympics even, we saw the rugby sevens and so on, and yeah, we look at the AFL, we look at the cricket. We get blown away, we blokes, because I reckon we've been guilty at times of underestimating the ability and the talent that's on offer.
Yeah, and I guess it's not entirely your fault by that by any means. I think for the first time, women's sport in Australia has a platform where it reaches the broader audience. I think, the talent has been there for quite some time. It's just about reaching a broader audience now.
Erin, you must pinch yourself, though, from where, say, it was at the start of your career to where it is now from a professional standpoint of view.
Yeah, absolutely. It's something that you sort of dream of as a kid growing up, wanting to play cricket for your country, but then also to think that we have a competition now that's, we're attracting some of the best players in the world, want to come to Australia and play in it, and being on television and live stream through Cricket Australia website, it's a pretty special time to be a part of cricket, and I'm really fortunate for the opportunity.
Yeah, and I saw a photo of you a while ago in your kit, and there seem to be a few logos floating around there, which is wonderful. It means sponsors are supporting you. Is that the case?
It is, yeah. This year we're really fortunate to have, Rebels obviously sponsoring the Big Bash once again. But Thunder have Mazda and Gotchu and Homeworld who have come on board as well. So, yeah, it's really pleasing to know that, there's companies willing to sponsor women playing sport. And it's crucial for the development of the pathways in our system as well. I think for the first time young girls have a visible pathway and can see, if they train hard, where they can get to.
And Erin, tell us a bit of your own story. So you were born in Taree and grew up in Tamworth, is that correct? And how you got into cricket?
I lived pretty much all my life in Tamworth. I did all my schooling there, and I grew up playing boys cricket. And it wasn't until I was 16 I sort of started playing with the girls in the Sydney competition, which meant a lot of driving for both mum and dad from Tamworth. But girls now have the option of playing in all-girls competitions or they can still play with the boys. And but I thoroughly enjoyed that. I was sort of playing with Josh Hazlewood and a few other boys running around in Sydney grade cricket at the moment. So it was a challenging, challenging start to my career, but I think I benefited from that. And, started playing for New South Wales Breakers when I was 18 years old, spent 7 years there and decided that I had enough of living in Sydney and got sick of the traffic and moved to Canberra a couple of years ago.
So hang on, so you were facing Josh Hazlewood, say, in grade cricket at the age 16, 17?
Josh and I grew up playing cricket. So we how old would I have been? I would have been 7 when I probably first played Josh.
Right. Was he frightening to face even at a young age?
He was still pretty tall. He always was tall, so that was scary, just the extra bounce. But, I think it was at that age, around 16, 17, where they started to get a little bit too quick for me, so I decided to move to the women's cricket.
When you're playing with that against the boys, did you get injured at all? I mean, your comedy, they throw a few bounces down, or...?
They do. I'm actually playing men's grade cricket again, so I've done the 360, so I'm in... playing second grade for Tuggeranong Vikings in Canberra. I find it really enjoyable. They treat you no differently. There'll be a few that want to try and knock your head off, basically. But it's a challenge, and I really enjoy it. And all the boys are really good. They just treat me as another cricketer.
Now, Erin, we look at the three forms of the game, I suppose, these days, the Test, the One Days and the 2020s, the Big Bash and so forth. And we often ask cricketers when we talk to them, is it difficult to convert from one to the other? From your point of view, disciplines applied, do you find it difficult going from variations within the sport or not?
No, not really. I think if you have the base, that platform to work off, it's all pretty much similar. Good shots will find the boundaries. It's just upping that intensity and the risk assessment becomes a little bit more in T20 cricket. You might take those extra runs where you might not in Test cricket, for instance. So I don't see a real issue with that. It's what you sort of grow up and get used to anyway. So, women's cricket doesn't have to convert to Test cricket. We only play one game every blue moon. So we only really go back and forth between one-day cricket and T20 cricket. And one-day cricket is getting to that stage now where we want to play the game similar to T20 anyway. We want to push ourselves to that next level.
Well, Erin, you were the player of the match in last season's final, the inaugural women's BBL final, 3 for 21 you took there with your off-spinners against the Sydney Sixers. Our market has the Thunder and the Melbourne Stars $5 joint favourites, but such is the evenness, I suppose, of the competition. The roughie in the field's the Melbourne Renegades at $8. Who do you see as your biggest threat to defending your title this season?
I picked them last year, so they probably don't want me to pick them again because they sort of underperformed last year. But I'm going Adelaide Strikers. I think they've got some real talented players in there, some dangerous players, and Sophie Devine, experienced with Charlotte Edwards. And then they've got their real, I guess, young guns coming through with Alex Price, Amanda Wellington. So, yeah, I think they'll be the teams to beat this year.
Erin, when you look at sport and cricket in particular, who have you modelled yourself on, female and male?
Male, I grew up watching Michael Bevan play. Yeah. He just always seemed to be there at the end getting the job done for Australia. Female-wise, I really enjoyed watching Martine Hingis in the tennis.
Mm-hmm.
Just the way she went about her business, I just thought she was an absolute professional.
Yeah. She's amazing, and longevity as well.
Absolutely, so hopefully something I can live towards.
and it's North Sydney Oval, Saturday night, at first game against the Stars.
Yes, Saturday night at 6:15, and it will be live on Channel 10 as well, which first time for prime time in Australia for women's cricket. So really looking forward to that. It's going to be a big game with Melbourne Stars. I think Meg Lenning's probably the crucial wicket there. She seems to be dominating world cricket at the moment. She scored 100 in New Zealand yesterday, so she's in pretty good nick. They're going to have to bowl really well to her.
Well, we wish you all the best, Erin. Great to catch up with you, and good luck.
Thanks very much. Thanks for having me.
Terrific. Thanks very much, Erin.
Erin Osborne there from the Sydney Thunder. Ben Dorries joining us now, Courier Mail. How are you, Ben?
Yeah, going enormous, lads. How are you guys this morning?
Good.
Good,
now,
mate.
We're talking cricket there. Glenn Maxwell's an interesting character at the moment. You wonder whether some will send him Christmas cards or not.
Yeah, you know what, guys? Like, I'm probably singing from a different hymn sheet on this one. Like, in the fair dinkum department, as a sports journalist, I've, you know, constantly, I guess, encouraged and demanded, I guess, over the years that sports people really do speak their mind and tell us what they think and not sort of answering cliches and riddles and whatever, because there's so many of them that just give you these boring, bland answers and we have no idea who they actually are. And this guy's sort of come out and admittedly very poor timing what he said about Matthew Wade, just as Glenn Maxwell's about to go into an Australian camp. He's ruffled a lot of feathers, so his timing was terrible. But I, for one, can't hang him out to dry for simply saying, you know, what he thought. And I thought the fact that he was fined by Cricket Australia for speaking his mind was absolutely ridiculous. So, to be honest, I think Glenn Maxwell's a little bit of a misunderstood sort of cat. I've had a bit to do with him over the years. Certainly, you know, he's got a bit of brashness about him. But I think deep down, he's a pretty good soul, and he was just speaking his mind on this occasion. As I said, his timing was a bit off, but I think the whole issue's been a bit overblown, lads.
Ben, he bagged his Victorian teammate and captain. You can't do that.
Well, he did.
I know it's great that they speak out. I totally agree with you from a journalist and public and fans' point of view. You want to hear players speak their mind, but cricket more than any other sport, because you spend so much time together around the dressing room, you need to all be on the same page, and surely that's something that needs to be kept in-house for the sake of the team.
Yeah, look, I understand your point totally, but I guess this had been bubbling along in the background for some time, hadn't it? I mean, he wanted to switch
states
to New South Wales, and Victoria blocked him and said, no, you're our player, and then he's turned up to do his best, and he's told that, you know, basically he's so out of favour that he's batting below the wicketkeeper, if you don't mind. So, look, I do understand your point, but I do actually have a bit of sympathy for Glenn Maxwell on this occasion. And you know what? Like, I think my great mate Robert Crash Craddock actually said on Fox Sports last night, and he was dead right, what he said on the cricket show, that I guess he probably says just as much this about Matthew Wade as it does about Glenn Maxwell. I mean, wicketkeepers are meant to be sort of, you know, do anything for the team. You know, you want me to bat at number 10, that's fine. You know, they're meant to be sort of givers rather than takers. So just the fact that sort of Matthew Wade elevated himself in the order, you know, above Glenn Maxwell probably says a little bit about Glenn Maxwell, about Matthew Wade's character, I think, as well. But look, it's a really interesting one to watch going forward, isn't it, lads? Give us a bit of froth and bubble to talk about anyway.
The sad thing is, Ben, I did a sportsman's night the other night, and I won't name the cricket. He's a bloke who's played for Australia regularly. And I mentioned Glenn Maxwell's name, said your reaction, and he just looked and said, no love lost from most of us.
Oh, really? Well, there you go. Look, one thing I will say, like, I actually, and I totally take your point there before, Jerry, but I actually quite like the characters in sport. I mean, I think we're seeing less and less, you know, characters in not only Australian sport, but world sport. It's becoming so, you know, the world sort of, you know, run by media managers and PR people, and, you know, you can say this and you can't say that. So, look, I think from time to time it's quite refreshing to actually hear a sportsman or sportswoman who tells us what they think.
That is true. I can't disagree with you there. This third one day tomorrow, it's a bit of a who-cares fixture that we'll probably forget about within an hour after it's all over, but still, I guess Australian players looking to make an impression, particularly heading towards the test at the Gabba next week.
Yeah, absolutely. And while we're on one-day cricket, what about poor old Kane Williamson the other night in Canberra? Like, the coin toss has come his way, and in the flattest, smallest ground in sort of world cricket, he said, we'll have a bowl.
What was he thinking?
I just couldn't... Well, I mean, look, even if they had a batted first and scored a... I mean, 330 is probably a par score at that ground. Even if they had a batted first and scored a grubby sort of 260 or something, at least it would have put some semblance of pressure on, wouldn't it? So, look, I think the New Zealand minds have been a bit fried so far this tour. I'm not quite sure why, because they were coming off a pretty good test series win over there in Kiwi land against Pakistan. But, yeah, look, I think this is a bit of a who-cares fixture, isn't it? The series has been won, and I think minds are really starting to turn to the Gabba test. Obviously, this is another pink ball test next week, the first one against Pakistan. But, look, something interesting up here that's been happening up here in Brisbane, lads, it's pretty much every day this week we've had a thunderstorm, and a pretty significant old thunderstorm as well. So there's been a lot of wetness and moisture and rain and humidity and whatever around. So, look, I think there's not too much more thunderstorm activity on the way, although there's another one forecast today. But I think next week we should be OK. But just with that backdrop, going into the Gabba's first ever pink ball test, where there's always a lot of humidity and stuff going on up here, with the ball, I think it could be a really fascinating test. And it surprised me, to be honest, if it went for more than 3 days.
Yeah, right. OK, so maybe you don't want Australia batting against the pink ball there with the moisture in the wicket there on the first day. They're $1.50 with tab.com.au. Pakistan, $3.65. The draw, $6.50. Remember, we haven't lost a test at the Gabba since 1988-89. That's still the case, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, that's right. That was the mighty West Indies side. If you went through that side, I think that would have been just about anyone. So it has been a real fortress up here for Australian cricket at the Gabba. But, of course, it's very different, I guess, this summer, isn't it? Because the Gabba's always had the first test in that period. So they've really sort of been able to pounce on the opposition, you know, straight away. I mean, they're generally playing sides that have sort of come off, you know, one practice match or something. This is obviously a lot later in the summer than it normally is here. And we've got the pink ball and day-night cricket to throw into the equation. So a few variables there. Look, I think you'd have to like Australia's chances. I mean, Pakistan played some pretty rubbish cricket over there in New Zealand recently and got pretty well beaten. But they are such an unpredictable side, the Pakis, and they've got a very good bowling attack. And don't forget, they were the number one test cricket side in the world earlier this year. So, you know, they're no easy beats. And if Australia's suddenly batting at night and the ball's hooping around up here at the Gabba, who knows? I tend to think, leave me out of sort of betting on the heavy favourites in these sort of, you know, day-night pink ball tests. I think Australia are $1.50 or whatever they are. It's too short for me.
Hey, Ben, how do the players find the pink ball? I mean, we hear a lot of discussion about the Duke's ball compared with the Kookaburra, that sort of thing. I mean, now we've got the different colour ones. Do they find any variations?
Yeah, they do, but I think it's not nearly as much as it was a couple of years ago. I think if you'd have talked to any cricketer a couple of years ago, they would have said, this pink ball just does too much. You know, it's hard to pick up. It's this, it's that. It's just not good enough. But I think that they've come around to the fact that, A, the ball has improved in the way they make it, and it's probably easier to see. It probably does less through the air than it would have a couple of years ago. But I think also there's been a realisation, guys, that pink ball day-night test cricket is sort of the future in a way of test cricket. I mean, what I mean by that is, you know, it's a great way to get crowds in. It's in our prime-time TV viewing audience, so you can just come home, turn the telly on, and the cricket's on. It just, you know, what else are you going to watch? Sort of Birch Backyard repeats or something. But I think it's terrific from that point of view. One thing I hope they don't do is sort of overcook it. Like, I think we've had two out of the six tests this summer will be pink ball tests. That's more than enough. I'd hate to see any more. So I hope it's kept as sort of like a bit of a marquee sort of a boutique sort of product, and they play one or two of them a summer.
Now, Ben, it has to be mentioned, I couldn't help but notice, that you're leaving, the Courier Mail after how many years?
Yeah, I am, guys. I've been there for 22 years. I turned 40 this year, so I walked in as a raw little 17-year-old kid, straight out of Wynnum High School, wearing a very sort of unsightly tie. I didn't know what I was doing, very nervous kid. So, look, it's been an absolute thrill being a sports journalist for that time. It's taken me all around the world with cricket, and I've had an absolute ball, but... Yeah, just at my age and my time of life, just thought it was time to explore some new possibilities. And got a nice little payout too, which I've got a child on the way soon, so that was terrific.
Your shout,
very
mate.
Much went out of my own terms, and it was something that I wanted to do. So, look, very much looking forward to the future, guys. I would say that people sort of knock newspapers these days and journalism, but if there are any young kids out there, listening to this who want to get into journalism, I'd certainly encourage them to because it's a terrific field. And I've had a lot of fun and got to do a lot of things that most people could only dream of. So it is a terrific industry.
Good stuff, mate.
Now, the Magic Millions, a lot of Queensland runners there.
Yeah, there's a few of them. One that interests me is a colt called Ours to Keep from the Chris Munch stable. He's been out of work, off the track for a little while, but won by 4.5 lengths back in October at Doomina. And it was probably one of the most impressive two-year-old winners we've sort of seen in Queensland in recent years. And I just think the Chris Munch stable, he's now been a trainer for a couple of years, or probably 18 months, just starting to get a bit up and about, very keen on these two-year-old runners that he's got. We'll probably see a few more unearthed. But, yeah, just one to keep an eye on, Ours to Keep. The two favourites, I think they're the two favourites in your market. I was actually there to see them both run on Melbourne Cup Day. Matanati, I think you call it, a filly from the Hayes stable, was on the inside of the track on Melbourne Cup Day in a sprint race. There was totally the wrong place to be and got beaten, but won that sort of division of the track by about 8 lengths, so probably a rightful favourite. And the Gay Waterhouse filly that actually won that race on the better going Invincible Star, I think it's about $11 in your market, guys, and look pretty impressive as well. So they're definitely two to keep an eye on.
All right, terrific. Good on you, Ben. Good to catch up with you, mate.
Yeah, good on you, guys.
Thanks, Ben.
Thanks a lot. Ben Dorey's joining us there. It's 25 past 10, Jared. Yesterday, I sent a text to Josh Powell. I thought we might get Josh and have a chat. Didn't hear back. I thought, I wonder why. And then he comes out and rides 3 winners.
Jared, flying, isn't he?
Just give us the little shove yesterday. Just kept it quiet and got 3 home there yesterday. But we've got him today. Morning, Josh. How are you, mate?
Good morning, Cody. Good morning, Garrett.
You're Josh. On fire at the moment, aren't you?
Having a fantastic run at the moment. It's really enjoyable, I can tell you that.
I reckon it would be. The checks coming in left, right, and see you're riding winners everywhere.
Yeah, it's just fantastic. I'm riding really well, and my manager's doing a great job. John Moultrie, he's really on the ball, and he also helps me out with my race day preparation and my confidence, and everything's just falling into place really well.
Since your return after that time off, Josh, how long did it take you, I guess, to get that confidence level back to where you wanted it to be?
Yeah, look, funny enough, my first ride back was a winner, so that helped out. That helped out a lot. That just instilled in my mind that I can do it. Regardless of the time off, I still have the ability to get the job done. And then obviously, just as time progressed and the more races that I rode well, it just helped my confidence get a lot.
For people who are unaware, you basically had a hip injury. There was almost like wear and tear, wasn't it, from riding?
Exactly right. Yeah, that's exactly what it was. There was a tear in the labrum, which in the cartilage, which needed fixing and then reshaping of the of some bone in the hip joint, the head of the femur bone. So, not a massive operation, but took a long time to heal.
Well, you described it beautifully one day, Josh. You said, I've been riding for X number of years so far, and if I want to keep riding for that long again, you actually had to stop and get that done.
Yeah, exactly right. It's got to a point where I rode for the best part of 12 months in a lot of pain, and I didn't feel that it was affecting me, my riding, all that much, but now that I look back and how I'm riding at the moment, well, I dare say it did have a negative effect on me.
All right, well, today you're on Perpetual Motion for Gary Fraser in the first. You've ridden this its last two. You won on it at Goulburn about a month ago, so backing up again today.
Yeah, he won in really good fashion at Goulburn 2 starts back. Then we went to Hawkesbury, and he was just a little bit fresh, really hot day. He got a little bit above himself and still ran a really nice race, but didn't pull up all that well after the event. So, look, I think we'll go down there today. I'll just ride him similar to what I did the day that I won on him at Goulburn, and he should be a bold chart.
$2.40 favourite with tab.com.au. Race 3, number 1, Able Gold. This is a 1,000-metre maiden. Able Gold for Gary Moore, a $31 chance. Drew wide last start. Sat off the leader, just couldn't run on, though.
Yeah, that's right. It didn't look great. Doesn't look great on paper, but I expect a lot of improvement here today. I think the horse was stripped fitter. 1,000 metres on a dry track will give him a push out of the gates and hopefully he's got enough speed to burn them off.
Now, Smoky Fortune in race 4 for Luke Price. It's at 2 runs back from a spell. First up run was good, and it showed pace.
Yeah, that's right. It's, um, it'll, race on speed. Looked a perfect race for it today, actually. I'd be very surprised if this horse doesn't figure somewhere in the money.
Yeah, $2.80 favourite with Tab. Race 5, number 3, Kravchenko for Jason Coyle. This is a 1,300 metre class 1, third up, and you rode it last start there at Kembla. It ran third, 3.5 lengths off the winner. That was in a benchmark 70.
Yeah, everything went wrong at Kembla. We showed okay gate speed, and then we got in a jam between Ralston and Valenquio, single Barry Connors, and we got spat out the back. I ended up having to go back in behind Mitchell Bellsmount at that point of the race. It just put us a pair further back than what we planned on being. He was able to get to the outside and work home for third placing, which I thought was very encouraging going here to Goulburn today. So I'm pleased to be on him.
All right, Texas Rebel, you're riding for Gary Portelli and in the Rebel Dane colours, this horse. He's had a trial, ran 8th of 9 to Hawkesbury and then had a trial a month later, a little bit of a freshen.
Yeah, I'll ride this horse off the speed and hope they go really fast and I get the last crack at them. I think he can show a really good turn of foot ridden that way. It is my first ride on the horse, but what I can gather, that'll be our best chance.
$6 chance, Texas Rebel. Race 7, number 2, Shellac for Gary Moore, a $5 chance. Just having its third start, Josh, what do you know about this gelding?
Yeah, well, Timmy's been on it and he gave me a good heads up about this horse yesterday. He said, give him a good push out, he'll race best on speed. He expects him to run quite. He expects a good show from him today. He felt the two runs under his belt now, he should be prime, ready to go.
Just have to ask you too about Nieta. I thought it was a great run under the circumstances there on Saturday. How good is she, Josh? How far can she progress?
Yeah, well, that's the exciting thing, Jared. I'm not too sure what her limit is, and I'm not sure the stable knows either. She's got this brilliant turn of foot, ridden off the speed that's going to take her a hell of a long way. I wouldn't be at all surprised if she come back, say the back end of the autumn, maybe, and then maybe into the like a Brisbane Winter Carnival, contending in good races, and it wouldn't surprise me at all if she was to pick up something big.
Now, the other day, you got up on a 50-to-1 pop owned by a pack of reprobate journalists, partiers, the rumour file. His form had been atrocious, and you got him home. I think some of them are only just getting out of hospital after having their livers repaired now, Josh. They were party boys.
Oh, well, I'm happy that I could be a distance to them in some way.
Well, if you get him home again, some of them may die. You know that, don't you?
Well, we don't want to be a part of that, but look, as long as they're having a good time.
That's what it's all about. Good on you, mate. What's your best today? Which one would you suggest is your best ride?
Oh, very, very hard to split them. I think